And before we do that, we're going to be recording this. So if anybody has any cell phones on, if you could turn them off, please. So I wanted to start with introductions. Greg?
Greg Schaefer, Development Engineering.
Nicole Snyder, Community Development.
Steve Bacon, Clark Regional Wastewater.
Andrew Gunther with PLS Engineering.
Mark Bull, Council.
Mark Gaefer, Peter Holmes.
Terry Wallen, Wallen Associates.
Mike Odrum, Olson Engineering.
Jamie Housing, Jordan Remus.
Eric Galimo, SGA Engineering.
Don Hardy at Berger Raven, and we'll have two folks missing, Mike Nato and Jeff Riston. Audience members, could you guys introduce yourselves?
My name is Bridget Bashan with Clark County Public Health.
Vicki Kircher, Land Use Review.
Angie Merrill, Land Use Review.
Chuck Harmon, Program Manager at Clark County Public Health.
Julie Olson, County Council.
Seth Owen, ASSU.
Rod Swanson, Clark County Public Works.
Susan Ellinger, Community Development, Land Use Review.
Thank you. I wanted to review the adoption of the minutes. Has everybody had a chance to review the meeting minutes, and is there a motion for adoption?
Mr. Chair, I have reviewed the meeting minutes and I move adoption.
I'll second that. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Review of upcoming events. Greg?
Thank you, Don. You'll find that on the page 2 of 2 of your handout there. Standard Board of County Councilors work sessions and hearings every Wednesday beginning at 9 a.m. You'll want to check the website there to make sure that unless there are any canceled. Also, standard BOCC hearings every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with the exception of the first Tuesday of the month, which is typically a 6 p.m. evening session. Specific hearings, we have a fire marshal inspection program fees next Tuesday, the November 8th, 10 a.m. We have a board work session on including the vision for a park capital facilities plan. Also, secondly, park impact fees. That's on Wednesday, November 9th, beginning at 1:30 p.m. And lastly, stormwater updates. Find that on Tuesday, November 22nd, 10 a.m. Following that, on your page there, Planning Commission work sessions and hearings. We have a revision to the Parks Capital Facilities Plan and a tenant park impact fees on Thursday, November the 3rd. Of course, that would be this evening. So 5:30 p.m. this evening. And then also following that, revision to the Parks Capital Facilities Plan and attendant park fees. Looks like a follow-up session there 2 weeks out on November 17th, 6:30 p.m.
Thank you. Greg, the Board of Commissioner hearing on stormwater update, do you know what that is in a thumbnail?
Rod.
It's to make a number of minor changes to the manual, mainly we call them errata, and we found a few omissions and minor revisions that rise to the level of requiring legislative action. So we've already been to the planning commission, and that's the final step.
Any controversial ones at all?
Not that I can think of.
Yeah.
Take a look at it.
Thank you, Ryan. Next on the items, we're going to discuss the Project Delivery Stakeholder Committee that the Board of County Councilors would like to initiate. And Commissioner Bull, would you like to kick this off?
Sure. Thank you very much. Thanks. Just to let you know, I think we might be down as retaining walls. Sorry to hurt your feelings there.
Success.
Yeah. Also, as you know, we're getting rid of the fee waiver the end of the year, and one of the things in the resolution is what we're going to do if we need to replace it. And I'm not sure if that is a waiver of fees or if it just is a change of service in some ways of how we handle the permit. So, you know, this committee is either, you know, direct fees, you're going to save you money or saving you time. It's probably more important than anything. So what we're trying to do, and my name's on it, but Julie's been one of the go-getters, is we're trying to put a meeting together of all types of people, essentially commercial housing, the people who do the implementation, and the people who pay for the write the checks, kind of a mix of that. And just come together a short, I think 6 months, and talk about the most important things that we can do, whether it's changing our code or, you know, like the subcommittee of stormwater or whatever, you know, inspections, anything's on the table. And then if there's also maybe instances, other cities have fee waiver, and it's essentially project by project, but you know, if you think we should do that, that's fine. Also with parameters. So we're asking this group to think about it and to give us one or two names or even more than that if you know anybody who is interested, and we'll start it off after the first of the year.
Thank you. Marty Snell and I did speak briefly on Monday about this, and he was mentioning that in addition to the information you mentioned was about perhaps looking at things like earmarking projects that would be important, prioritizing how do you expedite projects that the county really wants, might be part of that group as well in terms of the full discussion of what's right. going to be included. Yes. So it sounded like it'd be about possibly fees for permits, but it might be beyond that as well.
It'll be beyond that. You know, you just have an ombudsman, and you know, I think Marty's called an expediter, which anymore every person will want that expediter. but you know, that'll be talking about it. Yeah.
And Marty specifically from our group mentioned that, and there's a number of groups that are being tapped here. One or two people focus on land use, real estate, law, attorney, and another person from a multidisciplinary consulting firm. So out of this meeting, I was hoping we could get a nomination for those two slots. This is gonna start pretty quickly. This is a pretty quick startup. The definition in terms of exactly 6 months is the period. We're not sure what the meeting times, if that's once a month, but it's a chance to be involved with essentially the kind of ground up discussion about permit processes in the county. So open that to for discussion.
And I guarantee you, truly, this will not be a typical study group where we will just study the heck out of it and get nothing done. So we'll work on our names on it, but something will get that out of this group.
I'll volunteer.
And I will as well, considering the only other lawyer conspicuously
absent.
Yeah. And that's great. I don't know if we need to do anything more than just say that.
Now that an attorney's on it, I take all that back.
So I think that's great. I mean, that's
okay.
What we'd like to do is have that as a circle back here for this group as well. Seems like it feeds directly into that process. I think it's a great idea to start to hone in on those processes. And
Thank you very much.
So then we're still trying to fill someone who benefited from it, or a commercial contractor. Is that one of the other?
There are other three. Let me kind of give you this is the little broader brush. Outside of our group, but there are BIA, SWACA, CREDC, residential contractor, there's commercial contractors, mixed use people, there's other folks that are being tapped as well. So that was the lens here is Marty was trying to keep it somewhat narrow. I mean, literally this group could probably fill many of those roles, but I think he was just trying to limit it to two and specifically in those specialties. But it's a very broad group, and 12 is a total. So we're trying to not keep it, we're trying to keep it to a limit so it actually is productive, and I think that's important as well, but I think that will be a very good cross-section.
Don, what was the second group you mentioned?
SWACA. And CREDC, so and DIA is on there as well. So this is the first email that Marty sent to me, and so, and there'll be county staff as well on this, so it's kind of a mix. Eight folks, the idea would be about eight folks that would be selected, and about four or five from the county. So.
I just want to be sure, Mark, are you and Julie going to be in the room during these meetings, or are you going to review the outcome? Well,
probably one of us will be in the room.
I anticipate probably being in
Yeah. I think it'd be helpful.
Yeah.
Guidance on where you want to see it go.
Because we don't just want to do it to do it. We want to do it because we want to have an outcome that is meaningful to you and to those who are stakeholders.
Great. So, awesome. Yeah.
They volunteered a suggestion to maybe choosing somebody from planning commission that could fill one of the roles.
Oh, that's good.
Okay. Good.
Chair Bull, I would just say briefly, I think this is an excellent thing, and I just want to give it feedback from the perspective of and helpful to others that may not be directly involved in our stormwater subcommittee, but just kind of in context of that, you know, when we came to DEEB a couple of months ago, are there some that may want to take a look at some of these things with the stormwater code and the specifically SFRs, the 1 through 9, we got a very strong feedback and involvement on that. I had no idea, but I think our committee's up to like 20 on that. So I think that's very indicative that there's quite an appetite for this. I think we'll get a strong reaction. I think it definitely has place, and we're 100% supportive of it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think this has been a little bit of the challenge with the subcommittee. Of course, we're trudging on the stormwater, but I think it certainly is identifying additional interests and needs that are out there, and it's been a little bit of a challenge. It's been a little bit unwieldy, so I think this might even be a better platform to kind of function from, you know, to include a broader spectrum and kind of keep things a little more focused there. So.
And I forgot to say, but so there's at least three mayors is interested in the outcomes of this too. So I think that it will really help us because it's a county, but if the cities are also interested in your outcome, we'll give them everything, and it might really help us a lot more venues.
Thank you. Next item, we were going to talk about DEEB member announcements.
I have two quick ones. I testified at the October 18th hearing for the extensions, and that did pass. I think that was circulated to everybody, so that went well. And then also the single family SFR Stormwater Subcommittee is continuing to meet. We have another meeting on Monday, and we are in progress. So we'll have some probably to you guys maybe next meeting. So
sure.
Yeah, I think that's a nice goal. We should at least have something. So.
Any others? It's not on the agenda items, but, and it may be for next meeting, but at some point we should talk about vice chair. I know Jeff is for 2017. So I'm not sure if that's December or when we'll do that.
We usually do it on the first
of January.
First of January, okay. So we're a little ahead of time. Okay.
It's the first item on the agenda.
Okay. Moving on to FLD and Health Department updates. You guys would come on up?
That'd be great, Susan.
Yeah, come on,
yeah.
Yeah.
Come
on up.
About a few different things with land use. One of the things that we're trying to do is to improve all of our processes We're going through them slowly but surely, talking about each step and what we do and trying to be consistent between all of the planners. So we're getting consistent decisions and procedures for you guys. Along those lines, the health department recently contacted us and talked about their process a little bit. So we want to discuss that and some changes that we would like to make in the procedure for getting their comments and incorporating those comments into our staff course. So with me is Chuck Harmon and Bridget Bashaw to talk about their process a little bit and answer questions that you guys may have.
Hello, Chuck Harmon. I'm a program manager overseeing the drinking water and on-site programs. And I'll do a little bit of an introduction. Bridget Bashaw, who works in our development reviews along with another staff person, primarily her and Carla Souter, do these reviews. And she can do a little more detail on some of the issues. But in effect, we realize that, and we're doing this with a lot of other departments too, is making sure that we're communicating and coordinating better. And one of the things that we recognize in regards to public health issues around a land division process is there are times when a lot of the other work has gotten down the road, and then we realize, or the person doing the work realizes, they need to do a couple of reviews with us in either case, whether they have on-site septic and wells, or if they have neither. And the key issues are things around, one, if they have to have on-site sewage and on-site water, well water, we need to make sure they have enough water, make sure it's done with the right sanitary setbacks and the design and all that. In the other case where they're getting public sewer and water, there are still public health issues around if there were old septic systems or old wells, et cetera. And again, what would happen is people would get to the end of the process, come down to our office or hear that they have to address some of those kinds of issues late in it. And so again, this overall effort has been to work with these folks and get the issues that we need to have addressed from a public health perspective on the list of things to do early in the process, get some of them addressed so that folks who are looking to close or finish or get the final plat sign are not having to deal with some of these things at the last minute, because sometimes it can take some time to address them. So right now, and I'll let Bridget go on with some of the details of where we work inside. And there's some hand. I think everyone got the two handouts from us.
Okay, I guess I can go
where
over
those steps are in the process.
Some of the changes or improvements that we've made. So I guess in 2003 there was an agreement between community development and the health department that there would be a standard procedure letter handed out with all the development reviews, and we haven't really gone back to it since 2003, so those letters are included in some packets and not included in others. That was one. This isn't necessarily a new process, it's really improving that process. So one of the first things that we are making sure happens is that letter, we revised that letter because it's 13 years old, but that letter gets included with all the development review, pre-application conference comments. And that letter is pretty basic. It just lets all the applicants know that if you're doing a land development project that you need to come to the health department, get a health department development review. We go to the site and look for existing wells or septic systems. And if that applicant is actually proposing septic systems or wells, then we walk them through the process of what needed an approval for a septic system or well is. So that's really just an improvement to an existing step. For step number two, so these two pieces of paper are really very, very similar. This one is just kind of compares what the health department will be doing and provides a description of land development division process. And that was something that community development provided to us, the health department, because we didn't really fully understand what happened in each step. So it just kind of combines the health department process and the land division process. And then this other one kind of just reiterates what the public health involvement is. So a new step in step number two, preliminary application review, is that having the health department development review completed will be a requirement to reach the fully complete step. There's a couple reasons why we think that having it be a fully complete item is a good idea. One is that If we get it done by this stage, then that ensures that our staff can go out to the site and look at existing conditions versus going out to the site and looking at the conditions after construction. It's really hard to figure out where a house was and the septic system may have been or where a well may have been if everything's been one of those. So it really allows us to identify existing septic system and well concerns.
Bridget, may I interject right here? I believe that we are required to submit the DR letter. However, at the time of final engineering submitted. So that shouldn't be an issue unless it gets completely overlooked by staff, which in my experience, it has never been overlooked by staff, that that DR letter has to go in, and I believe engineering staff looks for it. It's either been submitted, we try to get it done early in the process, we understand the value of that, but a lot of times it's not required right now to be done or fully complete, and therefore we have in the past put it off. But when we go to submit our final engineering plans, they always say, hey, where's your development review letter from the health department? If you don't have it or haven't submitted it already, you don't get to submit.
So are you saying that you don't get to submit your construction application or that you don't get your final approval for construction?
No, you don't get to submit your final construction plans at all.
At all.
They won't take them across the town.
And I think we've been maybe inconsistent with that.
I see, okay.
And my understanding is for rural projects, mm-hmm. we're requiring the submittal at fully complete.
Oh, yeah.
And we're doing it different for urban. And so this is also a potential for making things more consistent.
Okay.
And combining the two so it's the same regardless of whether your system's urban or rural. So that is a change, yes. So once that's done, and we think that one of the benefits between in having that be fully completed, that preliminary application review is from a public health standpoint, we're going to be able to better identify hazards that exist. And that also applicant is going to better understand what they have to do moving forward versus getting the development review months later. They'll have a clearer picture up front what their costs may be. And then also, if we're not involved in the second stage and getting that development review done and submitting our comments back for the staff report, if our comments aren't in that staff report, then we end up in legal issues down the road. It turns out that our comments need to be included in that staff report for us to require things like septic envelopes to be included in the plat. So I think the industry as a whole has been very good at including septic envelopes. When late in the game we say, hey, you need a septic envelope in the plat, they've been doing that, but that's not a legal requirement. But my understanding is that if it's not included in that comment, then our hands are pretty tied. So getting it included in this second step really helps us out there, making sure that we get setbacks identified on the plat and get them protected. We have never really been involved in the engineering construction plan review stage. I think that we use the packets regularly to complete a review, but our department has never had a process where we consistently complete engineering reviews versus the development review information that we've received. So we have started a step where we can review the engineering construction plans to be sure that there's a septic system or a well that will remain on this for this project, that the none of the stormwater or transportation items that were included after our development review are impacted.
Will this be able to be done digitally?
Yes. Yeah, so the health department is being included in many of the email reviews that you're probably included into at certain steps, but we've gotten our name added to those lists so that we can do those digitally, yeah.
So do you need to review all of them or just some?
The engineering plans?
Yeah.
Probably all of them. I think at this point, we're very new in the process. We're working through. Mm-hmm. Maybe if we can identify some certain work that we don't need to all the time, then we'll simplify the process, but right now, I think we're going to start reviewing all of them.
Is it anything that the end user is really going to see? Like, is it going to take more time? Do we have to make additional submittals, or is this just internal routing?
It's just internal routing. And really, this kind of changes all. The health department has in the past gotten very involved in this final plat stage. So we're trying, this process change allows us to move a lot of our reviews up earlier in the process. So by the time you get to this construction final plat stage, we're done. There shouldn't be that bottleneck of the health department like there kind of has been in the past. We're really trying to eliminate that.
or just a concern I have for the next one is there is that bottleneck right now. I'm trying to get the final plat recorded, and a lot of times it's another problem. So I want to make sure that when we move this, we change the process, our final engineering plans aren't caught up in the whole part now. Okay. And then all of a sudden, this construction season, we're going to winter because something took longer getting through the pieces. And a lot of times it's, you know, a little, it's not something that's not going to get resolved. It's maybe where exactly the septic's going to be, and maybe they have to go out and get another perk test because it moved a little bit during construction. I hate to see something like that delay breaking ground and end up, you know, having to work through the rainy season. So.
Right. I don't anticipate that we're going to be on the same time frames with our review that everybody else is when they do that in the engineering review. And the engineering review, well, the construction review, it shouldn't, but what it helps us do is identify if there is, if the stormwater is where the reserve refill area was, we're going to be in holes. Our turnaround time for removing these septic holes is 10 days. So it shouldn't hold it up too much.
Well, that can be significant though, because then you have to schedule someone to go out and do it. So maybe that the guy doing the perk test is a week or 2 weeks out, and then another 10 days. And it could be a significant time frame. So I know that's a perfect example where during engineering something moved a little bit and new perks have to be done. It's not that they might not pass. Can the process continue?
I think that it probably could. Yes, I think that we could at that time identify that there is an issue between what has been approved from the health department and where a stormwater infiltration system is, for example. And we could say, you know, the engineering plans as proposed is in conflict with a reserve area, and that reserve area needs to be reestablished prior to final plat. I think that we can do something like that. Just gives us an opportunity to notify the applicant that there's a change, and yes, you're going to have to make a correction to the health department.
And that would be appreciated, as long as it doesn't hold up, or that can be done during construction and other pieces. There's a little risk by the applicant, because maybe they don't perk where they need to do it. And if that's the case, they got to come up with something that does work. Mm-hmm. But I hate to see it stop the process.
Right. Bridget, can I ask a question, please?
Yes.
It's interesting. I just had a conversation with Chuck today. And Chuck, I want to thank both of you for your timely response. Whether I get the answer that I want, I just want to thank you for being responsive. Because as Eric just mentioned, time matters. And what would be helpful for me is to understand, does this process apply to both a new project that's decommissioning wells and septics, and therefore going to sewer and public water? Or is this for a new construction site project that is going to employ and drill a well and add a septic system?
It is for both.
For both.
Mm-hmm. So the system, the process, the review process will be the same regardless of the outcome of the project. One of the big issues that has come up for us is that we, as you know, are required to do development review when the property is going to be on septic or drinking water wells. The development review happens early because it's a legal requirement.
Right. Yeah.
But what happens is when it's going to public water, public sewer, there are still wells present, there are still septic system present, and they don't get identified. And so we don't get involved in the process until way late in the game. And then we go to the property and don't know where the well was, but we know there was a well there because there wasn't public water before and there was a house. So now we have to work with the developer and try and figure out where that well was and how they're now going to figure, how they're going to find it and decommission it, even though they don't know where it is either. We know it was there and it has to be found and it has to be legally decommissioned. So it can create a lot of expense and a lot of time, and that is usually happening at stage 5 near the final plat when everybody wants it done.
This is just my personal experience, which is pretty different than how we worked. But we did an existing condition plan typically, right, that locates those elements that you just described.
And that's what we do during the development review. So we call that a development review, where the health department goes out, reviews the property, identifies if there are existing septics or wells. That doesn't always happen early in the process. Not every applicant does that early on. Some do, and they don't run into difficulties later on down the road. But it's not a requirement that they do it unless the project's going to be on septic systems or drinking water wells. If the project's going to be on public services, then there's not a requirement that they come to us early in the process. They find out about it way later. And by that time, sometimes the there's no record of where the septic system went or where the well went.
Okay, so I'm going to present myself as an expert, I'm just from my personal experience. The letter that I got from you guys said that prior to certain things happening,
right,
these other conditions had to occur, building permission, septic abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it seems like that process is being currently being met unless I'm missing the point of
okay.
your concern.
Right, so that letter that you got is what we will be notifying every applicant in state step one that they need to get.
Yeah.
And by the time fully complete status is reached, that applicant has to come get that service. You can't be fully complete until you've gotten your development review letter from us. You do that. Other people don't.
It's not required to submit that with the application if you are going to be connecting to public sewer and water. It's only required to be submitted if you are going to be drilling a well and or putting in a new septic system.
Thank you.
So is that what is being for? What you just said, Mike, so it's only applies to well and septic, not?
That's the way the current process is.
Right,
the way we're moving is that it will apply for all.
So will this apply to site plan review as well?
Yes.
Is that? Okay, absolutely. So in the urban area, let's say, for example, I got several questions. We have projects that have had reviews before. Is there a way to expedite that process? For example, like WSE Vancouver, they've been through that. Is there a way to make that process a little easier than to have to come back through that process yet again for a building that's within the same footprint that's been established in like the master plan? Just as a question.
That's something that we can look at, but it's nothing
question.
That this process review is addressing, but it's something that we can look at further.
And part of that is, I mean, you know, I guess that would be great if there was a way to deal with that. And we've actually kind of worked with the health department in the past where we've gotten those exceptions, but it's sometimes taken as long as it would have taken had we just gone through the entire process. But I'm not complaining, but just observations. And then wells, just a general question on wells, whether they're going to be used for irrigation, whether they're in the urban area or the rural area, whether it's being used for irrigation, they're under 5,000 gallons a day or under, they're exempt. Is there a review process that's needed by the health department if they remain for irrigation?
Yes.
Yes.
We have an irrigation review.
Okay.
And that would be identified in step two, the development review letter.
Okay.
We would say there's a well present, is proposed to be kept for irrigation. You need to get the irrigation review approval and we'll attach.
That's just the wage review?
It's basically just the wage review.
And then
there are some setback requirements. The property has to be leased half an acre. There's a couple additional items that pertain to irrigation wells.
So if they're exempt by ecology, basically there's a review and you're just basically looking at them to make sure that there's not contamination that would enter.
Yeah, we look at water quality and construction standards, make sure they don't pose a safety or a health risk.
I mean, many times these are not areas that are even being developed on, you know, sites that aren't even part of the development, they're just there. And they've been there for years.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we talked about with timing is this isn't going to be a counter-complete item. So if an applicant comes in, submits, and you don't have this, we would point that out to you, send you to the health department, and we're also looking at ways that you guys can submit at our office instead of having to go to the health department.
We're working on it. It's very painstaking.
That would help. Our feelings aren't hurt that you don't want to come to our offices.
Actually, it's really easy. Yeah. Yeah. I would say it's really easy.
You like it?
I,
you can find
I, walk, I walk right in. They take it in. They type it in. I give them a check and I'm good.
It's
not
hard.
It's
long. Hard.
Yeah, as long as they can find a parking spot.
Yeah. Parking mojo. Yeah. So.
Okay.
So Susan, just to your point, so does that mean that you can submit and during the 21-day fully complete process, that review is happening? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. What?
The 21-day fully complete review, you submit the application, you submit at the same time to the health department during the 21-day period, you submit both at the same time, they run parallel, and if you provided all the information at the end of that 21 days, you get a fully complete.
From the health department?
From the health department and the county, that's what I'm asking.
So 21 days?
The health department's review, what we talked about yesterday, the health department is reviewing most of these requests in 30 days. And so we're not exactly on 21 days and 30 days.
Process
that. You just get it that way.
We would see most people doing it beforehand, but if you did not do it beforehand, when you turned in your counter-complete application, we would let you know, and you would go to the health department, and hopefully there would not be much delay if the review was not completed.
In fact, we recommend sometimes during feasibilities that they do this too, because we've had surprises.
And we're also going to let people know with this letter at pre-app, so hopefully before you come in for counter-complete, you would be getting the review.
Can I just make a general comment? First of all, thank you and the staff in general for the sincere effort that you make to process applications and do the business of the county. But I think it's important that, as we all know, to remember time matters. Every day matters. So when we talk about affordability and cost of living and wages not keeping up with all this and all that, every day matters. And the difference between 21 days and 30 days, it matters. And my general comment would just be, again, thank you for the fact that you care enough to come and propose ideas to try and make the process better, but also just a friendly, collaborative reminder that whatever you can do to, bring timelines concurrent, it really makes a difference. So, in general, a thumbs up, thank you. And please help on timelines to the extent that it's humanly possible.
I just want to extend that a little bit. We make every attempt to do this review as early in the process as possible, so it's not an issue that holds up anything. I would not recommend to anyone that they submit for the health department development review the same time they're making their cabinet application. That should be done 2 months at the time of pre-app. You can do it as early in the process as you want, as long as you have an existing conditions plan, some kind of site plan or plat, and a quick narrative. Your utility reviews are done in your GIS packet. That's really all it takes.
Okay, just one more comment. People in this room, we should know better. I should know better. But the mom and the pop guy that walks, and they go, really? Wow. I guess I missed my construction season. Yeah. That's the guys that really don't know that we can try and help.
I think this process, that particular one, I think is a good suggestion, because we moved in our office. We always do, and we submit the application. We just started doing that because it came up. We had a few problems. We just changed our internal process. So that's how we did it. So you guys are changing it to match what we're already doing, which we're doing it because it makes sense. You guys are going to require it now, and I think that'll help the mom and pops, because we've been through the process. We know to do it now. They don't. It's not on their checklist. So putting on a checklist, it's going to say they do it early.
Yeah. We
so
talked about help. That.
Right. Yeah. The one concern I have is some of the additional engineering stuff and the time associated with that, because that seems like a new process. And I see these where we go through this process revision and we forget about what the problem is we're trying to solve. So what is the real problem? And it sounds like the real problem is these things are coming up too late in the process and then they're holding things up. So we're trying to get to them a little earlier. And by doing that, moving things earlier makes sense. I hate to see additional processes that cause additional delays, and I guess from what I'm hearing, I like almost all of it, except on the engineering review plan, we need to make sure that doesn't cause additional delays, and as stuff comes up, I can just see it happening. We talk now that if a perk needs to be moved, that it's not going to cause a delay, but I can see as time progresses, they're going to say, nope, we need to have all the perks, and if something moves, you're going to have to do that before we sign off on engineering, and that is going to be a delay later. Might not be necessary. It could happen concurrently. They can probe around. They can do it during, before they record the plat.
Well, I am one of two people making the processes for the health department, so I will definitely address this, and I'll talk with you further too.
We'll definitely keep that in mind as we continue working through the process.
And Diana Nutt's been involved in the conversations as well.
Yeah.
And so, she knows this is happening, and we'll bring that up as a concern and talk about things that we can do to avoid issues at that point.
Okay. Coordination is great. Just want to echo that you guys are, it was somewhat mysterious at times in the past about how things all kind of worked, and the fact you guys are working together is great.
Yeah, fix this. And that is a little mysterious to us too. So the next stage, number four, Diana and I are working together to be included on the emails where she calls for paper as-bills. Where that part calls for paper as-bills, they will notify us so that we can look at our records and see that we have adequate septic abandonment documentation and well decommission documentation. So that we do not, we can let the construction inspector know that we're waiting for additional pieces. So that we can get all that together. So by the time the title of the person that does this inspection.
The development inspection and construction.
Okay, the construction inspector. By the time that inspection is done, all the health department construction requirements should be done too. All the decommissioning and abandonment items should be done. So when you get the construction complete or construction approval information, that includes the health department construction requirements. Not new construction for septic systems, but decommissioning and abandonment is really what we're talking about here. So that means that by the end of phase four, final plat should be agreed because we've already been verified that we've got the documentation that we need. So final plat should just come in and go out.
Sure.
Last minute identification of existing wells that need to be found in the basin.
We're missing information.
So the only hiccup there is construction and final plat tend to happen at the same time. So it's kind of happening that way now, but it's probably work out the kinks because a lot of times they turn the paperwork and they're doing it's kind of going in parallel. So,
and I think that just having getting the notification to us via that email, I think we'll get the information to us kind of requested even a couple days prior to when we're getting it right now. And we have not reviewed any construction paper as built. We haven't been notified of that yet. We just came up with this idea yesterday. So as we go through that a few times, it'll help us identify if we can improve the system or if it's helping at all or if it's kind of. So this is all very new. We've done steps one, two, and three a few times. Steps four and five, we're just going to be working into our process this week, and actually probably.
So the purpose of as-builds, though, is normally to show underground construction, not even the surface stuff. So a lot of times, there's no information on the as-builds that really help the park to see. It's
right.
Just going to say, so what you guys need is that letter showing it was the paperwork showing it was decommissioned.
Right. So we're not asking to see the as-built.
No,
we're just getting getting included in the email that goes out saying I'm ready for your as-built.
Yep.
So that we know that you guys are at this stage or that the project is at this stage where decommissioning and abandonment, the verification, that documentation needs to be present. So we can say we need three more decommissioning for the septic systems submitted. So just helps get the information out to the developers. I will leave some cards, so if you have additional thoughts or questions on the processes, please let me know. Carl and I are working on this, and we'll be meeting with community development just to kind of solidify everything that we're doing. And it's a work in progress, so we'll have a couple weeks at least, if not more.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So we've also been working on some final plat changes. They're pretty minor in nature, but we sent out an email, we got some comments back, and so we've been having some internal discussions about the comments that other folks had. And so I'd actually like to bring back something final to you next month. Put that off until next month.
Sure, okay.
Sounds great.
Thank you.
Next item, preparing for the 2017 annual report.
Thank you, Don. I put this on the agenda, not that we have to dive too deeply into this, but at least as a placeholder, surprisingly enough, we're marching right on into the end of the year. I think consistent with last year, our county manager, Mark McCauley, had an interest in kind of a preview of the report. I think we did that in January. in 2016, invited Mr. McCauley in, also our department department managers, Heath Henderson, Marty Snell, and Oliver Ojeko. So to kind of work with Deeb and kind of preview, I also believe that we typically target the first quarter of the new year where we'll present previous year's report and then lay out the two-year work plan. So I guess with that, and I have placed it as a tentative for our annual report and work plan in the December agenda. So I just mainly wanted to make sure that that's, you know, appropriate timing and see if there's any questions or concerns if we proceed in that way.
I think that's great, Greg. So the timing for the board, again, presentation, what was?
Usually first quarter. I think we'll work with Mark McCauley on that, but I think we usually target kind of March, April at the latest.
It's been pushed off till June, I think.
Okay.
No, I think it was 1 year under my watch. But not through any fault of mine.
I think that was the year we actually had a planned session. It got canceled at the last minute. We had to bump it a month. So
probably got stuck with retaining laws.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, just the one thought I have, both on what we covered this year, but just it feels like the board is really open to more ideas about where they want to go. And so perhaps for December, if there could be some thought to that, as to what the board wants us to be focusing on in 2017.
Excellent. I'll write Mark. That's a great point. I'll write Mark and see if you'd like to provide us some feedback there.
And,
so
and part of that might be, what are they getting phone calls on still? That's one of the reasons why this why D was created in the first place, was to reduce the number of phone calls at the time the commissioners got.
And the committee, for example, I mean, that's just great. They took that on themselves, moving that forward. If there's other things that they want to float, yeah.
Okay. So I'm thinking I'll go ahead and invite our county manager to our January meeting, and thinking that still allows us for December, that we could really take some time, plow through our accomplishments, the things that we can check off. You know, that we did in 2016 for our 2016-17 work plan, and then start to prep for that meeting for January with the county manager and the department heads, and then I'll also work with Mark and see what's a good date for the board in March, April time frame to actually bring forward the report. So, okay, great.
Next item, we'll talk about PIF rates. So.
I do not see.
I told them to come up about 3:20, so they should be here any second.
Okay.
I estimated.
Can we return back to the?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I know one item that has come up, and I've talked to a couple of counselors about it as far as the Hearst Supreme Court decision in regards to water rights, wells, and Spokane County has recently reacted already to that decision. Clark County's kind of taking a more patient approach, but I do understand that they intend on creating or having a work session in December that may require a work group, also dependent on if the legislature or not reacts to that in some fashion. Can you give us kind of a Cliff Notes version of what that is? Because I read it and I didn't quite understand it.
You also include what 5,000 gallons means. Was that one house? Is that
personal well?
Yeah.
It's a house. So it, as far as the decision goes, as I understand it, it's in the past when you were getting a new well out there, all that was required you to do was demonstrate that you had a factual ability to get water. That's the requirement under 5817. In light of the decision, I think it has created another additional step in the process whereby you also have to demonstrate that you legally are not impacting a superior water right. So it may require you to have a
additional testing done, it required you to go get a legal opinion from the water rights attorney. Significant
hydroid analysis.
So, Dan, and I think there's also some implications in there for the GMA planning purposes that cities and counties that are doing expansions have to consider water availability when doing so, and that's certainly part of Future Wise's current appeal of the current.
There was a presentation last week at the Marijuana Association Oregon Washington joint session. I attended part of that session on that topic. It's a pretty complicated thing. They're talking about Ellensburg and Superior Rights, you know, what you're talking about. And then the fact on their mapping for the county out there was that there were some areas that simply would not have water at all. So, yes.
I could talk a little bit about it. It's very early in it, but I think what that decision is a fundamental disagreement between water rights allocation law, which just gives water to people, right, with no concept of managing the resource, and the Growth Management Act, which requires counties and cities to protect the resource. And in Whatcom County, the surface water rights were no longer available, they were completely allocated. And the county continuing to allow exempt wells under the exemption from state water rights law was found to be in conflict with their requirements under the Growth Management Act, and so that's a big deal.
The part I didn't get to on that was when you don't have the ability to develop, what do you do in that situation? How does the county reconcile that?
I'm speculating on this, but if I'm in the Lewis River Basin, I would be extremely nervous about potential moratorium. I'd be quite blunt about it.
Is that then the superior water right that you're referring to then? I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I mean, are there egg users out there that already have the ability to draw down on that area? I know this pretty intimately because we're doing some of the expansion properties, I had to have our water rights lawyer weigh in on the ability of one particular property, for instance, to get additional water to do farming activities as environmentalists are alleging proved. And what was found is that you're not going to be able to get any water to do that because it's already a limited resource out there. So if I'm a new rural lot, I want to get a building permit, and you go into the counter and you now have to do these tests or provide a legal opinion, I'm not so sure you're going to be able to get a permit.
And the Ellensburg example started out as a private bank situation for wells, and the camp was so complicated, the county ended up taking it over. So. This has pretty big implications for Clark County. You might start a whole new division that would just be dealing with water.
This is more, this is also, it affects people who own an individual parcel. If they want to build one home, it's not just the development. It also is if there's an existing well that's not connected to a home currently, you may not be able to use that well. I mean, it's a little far-reaching.
I'm really intrigued that one of the premier water rights attorneys, Sarah Mack, was giving a presentation to the BIAW legal committee next week. I'd be really interested to hear her take on that. And of course, we can report back if any materials to it. But it's a fluid situation, no pun intended. And obviously, I think that the county is going to want to address that. So I think just, again, bringing it to this group's attention, there probably will be some more group that is created around that.
Yeah, so it is a huge issue for men, yes.
The Walsh issue will be canceled on December
19th.
No, December 14th.
December 14th. Yeah, thank you.
So what's the county's position as of today? They issued a building permit?
It's unclear.
know that legal counsel is reviewing the decision, and that's why we want to get this counsel quickly to at least get some understanding of what it really means and what will be the policy of the county going forward. I think Jamie would agree, and some would agree, that the county is just in a very difficult position as to how to interpret the ruling. What does that mean? I think the body shifts to the county now, not to the county. So this is really a big issue, and it's one that may even elevate to a discussion at the WASAC, and they may even be pushing for the legislature to change something. So this is really huge. I cannot tell you what the council, we are talking about it internally, the lawyers to interpret what it means. Everybody's coming out giving their own opinion. So we don't know yet, but I think this huge ruling, it has implications for my staff and for my department in terms of what we do going forward, as it's clear to us what is it, what does it mean, because some will interpret it as a moratorium. I don't know. Yeah.
Does it impact any issue, any connections relative to public water?
Well, that's I think the way I'm understanding it is, I think Rod explained pretty well that we have this interplay between GMA and this water rights allocation. So to the extent that the counties are going to do any expansions of UGAs, they're now going to have to account for any impact on water rights. You know, I think fortunately, I don't understand, the cities like Camas and others may have a lot of water reserves already banked. I'm not certain where the county is in that. But this may force us.
It's a CPU, I think.
Yeah, this may force us into, like Don said, into getting water banks or some other tool out there. And you know, as wells are also decommissioned, does that, should those wells go into the
Yeah. Probably don't know. Because they're exempt.
They're empty.
Does that come off? Is that just still showing out for the gap?
Yeah.
So does the average house use 5,000 gallons a day? Is that what an exempt well?
The assumption uses less than 5,000
gallons. Yeah, it uses less.
One single family residence.
That's supposed to be more for
single family residences, maybe in the 300 gallon a day.
Urban.
300?
These are large wells, and it's a big deal to get 5,000 gallon.
Oh, it is.
You got to get an ecology permit.
You have to get a permit.
A permit from ecology. It's a very long wait time, and kind of goes back to this water right issue. And I think it'll be interesting on the next steps as to who has the rights. CPU, the tribes. I mean, who else has those rights? And that's the starting point. And so from there, you say, is that a superior right or not? And how do you measure it? How do you measure the diminishment of future wells?
Yeah, interesting case.
Thank you. So moving on to PIF rate update. So
we got Bill here with us.
Bill? Come on up. We're waiting for you.
Running ahead of schedule, which is weird. there's no walls there.
Yeah.
Do you want the PowerPoint?
Yes, please.
Can you ever see that, or should we adjust the lights? It's fine, I can't
push the buttons. Thank you.
There we go.
Is it okay?
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody.
everybody. My name is Bill Gierke. I'm the Parks Manager for Clark County. And we're here today to talk about the revisions to the Parks Capital Facilities Plan. We met with you back in April to talk about the park impact fee increases and the implementation rate. And so.
There she is.
Actually, Laura's going to give most of the presentation, but you can jump on in here, Laura, if you like. And we're just getting started.
Okay, great.
We're a little ahead of schedule.
You're ahead of schedule.
Okay. All right. So, we're here today to talk about the Parks Capital Facilities Plan. Of course, a major component of that is revising park impact fees. The presentation I'm giving to you is basically the presentation we're going to be giving Planning Commission tonight. We have a work session with them. And if you can't hear me, please let me know, and I'll try to speak louder. Clark County opted not to renew its MOU with the City of Vancouver.
Our interlocal agreement with the City of Vancouver, so we formed our new Parks Division. And then the first thing we did after we formed the Parks Division was to form a Parks Advisory Board. And the first thing that they were charged with doing was renewing the Parks and Recreation Open Space Plan, which was had expired in 2013. We needed to do that to be grant eligible.
And these are the major components of the Park Recreation Open Space Plan that was adopted in 2015, and there are elements that are required by the state. So we adopted the parks plan in 2015. As Bill mentioned, we had to do that fairly quickly so we could be grant eligible. But when we were working with the comprehensive plan update, which that dovetailed into, we saw that we needed to update our parks capital facilities plan so we can so that our overall comprehensive plan would be meet state requirements. And also, just to add, the parks impact fee had not been updated or a new fee adopted since 2003, so we needed to make updates. In the next few slides, I'll show you the schedule and the new fee rates. Those new park impact fee rates were part of the capital facilities plan. And it was adopted with the comp plan update. It was during the deliberation for the comp plan update that councilors indicated an interest in revisiting how the fees were phased in, how were the new fee rates phased in. Staff did some research to determine how we could meet that requirement. And per state law, the way we can do that is through an out-of-cycle comprehensive plan amendment, which requires that we adopt it at the same time the county adopts its budget. In this case, it's December 6, 2016, and a few slides I'll talk about the adoption schedule. So a major component of the capital facilities plan for parks is a level of service standard, and you all work with transportation and with traffic impact fees and traffic studies, and so you all know about level of service standards. Parks works in a similar way, not as technical. The national standard is 10 acres of, the guideline is 10 acres of park per 1,000 population. The county's adopted standard is 6 acres per 1,000 population, or 60% of the national standard.
Next slide is just going to show how we're doing in terms of meeting this adopted target of 6 acres per thousand. So for neighborhood parks, we have approximately 107 acre deficit, or another way to look at it is that our performance is 67% of our adopted standard. Community parks doing a little bit better. We still have a deficit, but we're at 76% of performance standard.
And that's for acquisition.
These are the park impact fee districts. Districts 5 through 10 are the county districts. 1 through 4 are in the city. And the county and the city share districts in 5 and 7.
The county used to share districts 1 and 4 with the city, but when we separated, they agreed that because the lion's share of those two districts were in the city, that they would take those over fully.
These are the currently adopted PIF rates. We had a consultant, Conservation Techniques. They're the same consultant we use for looking at different scenarios for phasing and fees, which I believe you all have a copy of that consultant's report. So the Parks Advisory Board had recommended that they phase in the new fee rate over 3 years. And that passed through Planning Commission, ultimately the board. These are the scenarios that, these are the alternative scenarios that are investigated in the consultant's report that you have now. Different ways of increasing or first phasing in the new park impact fee rate. And then I have the corresponding page in the consultant's report if you want to jump to those different scenarios.
Are you able to see those scenarios okay? So the first scenario is a 5-step, 20% per year. The second scenario is a 4-step, 25% per year. The third scenario is a 5-step, that's 60% on the first year, and then 10% for the following 4 years. And then the last scenario is a 3-step, 50% on the initial year, with a 25 and a 25 a few years after.
So just to be clear, what you're presenting today is an alternative to what was previously approved, which is the proposed 3-year phase step increase of the parking back fees that you presented to us previously.
Right. So this
to lessen the overall impact of the increase, of the significant increase that we have here. And so this is an alternative that you're presenting to the PC and to the board. And I just want to make sure that's what we're talking about here. Right?
Yes.
Yes, it is. So during the initial approval phase, the councilors had an interest in revisiting the implementation rates,
right.
And so that's why we're here today.
This is the impact of the different scenarios in the consultant's report. We include the estimated 5-year revenue totals given the currently approved implementation scenario, and it shows the impact of revenue. Revenue shows the impact on the private share.
What accounts for the significant differences between, say, the 5-step and the 3-step? Is that
each step has its own impacts. Basically, implementation rate. The implementation is sooner, of course, in the 3-year than it is on a 4 and 5. The percentages that are introduced on the very first year has an impact. And so the end result is that you can see on the very right-hand column there what the adopted plan is on the very top, and bringing in a total of about 29 million over a 5-year period. Mm-hmm. And so the five-step at 20% per year is a $23 million over the 5-year period of revenues. Four step is a 25 million.
Okay.
And so basically with each step, you're gonna see what could potentially be accumulated over the 5-year period. And so there's a range of about $1 to $6 million, depending on what stage you've chosen to convert to that revenue.
Questions?
Do they have to be paid? Do they have to be built within a year? When you collect those, is that a 6-year window? What is the time frame to spend the revenue that's generated? Is that a 6-year?
Oh, we have a 10-year window. Yeah, it used to be 6. During the Great Recession, they decided, because everything was closed down, the board decided to turn present to a 10-year.
And on the far away, what is it that the county thinks they need for a target to meet that target? 6 acres for 1,000?
Well, the adopted plan obviously will give us the best opportunity to meet our plan goals in the capital facilities plan. The other steps will get us there. It's just going to take longer to get us there. So that's essentially it.
Is the parks department right now running really in the hole at the current rates? Do they not have operating funding? Are they in the hole?
We have some operating funding. I think we have a total in our GIF accounts of around $11,500,000. We've been extending that down. We're building 2 neighborhood parks right now, so it's in the Tower Crest. That's going to take out of the combined fund and the development fund. We have bought 4 properties this year so far, a couple neighborhood parks. We bought Prairie Fields this year in Fresh Prairie, and then we actually had a donation property. So we acquired 4 properties this year. And so we are trying to go out and acquire properties to meet all service levels is one of them. But we're also trying to buy properties that are available right now while we can. And of course, as you know, there's a lot of competition for those properties and the prices are going up. So the more capital we have to work with, the better, the more capable we'll be of going out and buying properties. And so I've got a map that shows our target goals for each and every district, in order to achieve those goals. And some of these districts, we need to buy 4 or 5 neighborhood parks, maybe a couple community parks, and then each district is different. But the idea behind it is that based on from our growth plan, what our citizens had told us is they want to be able to walk to a park, not necessarily drive to it. And so a reasonable walking distance is a 1/2 mile walking distance. And so the idea is to try to build a park that's within a 1/2 mile walking distance of our residents.
What about private parks? I know we do a lot of little open space tracks and private parks and projects. Does that come out of that percentage, or is it competitive?
We don't account for those. They're different sizes. Our park standard right now for neighborhood parks is between 3 and 5 acres. We're actually reducing that down to 2 to 5 acres because lands are getting tougher to find. So we can put all the components into a 2-acre park, and we can put into a 3-acre. So we're going to lower that standard. Some of the parks that are built along the subdivisions are pretty small. We don't account for those.
What if they do? I mean, if you look at that target, that's 6 acres per 1,000, is it?
Mm-hmm.
What if they meet that on their side with a private park, or they do a small pocket park and they develop it with their development? Could they be exempt from the fees then? Would that be accounted for?
We haven't done that. We don't issue PIF credits. We've been basically taking the money, so we have control over the size of the properties. And we have some neighboring cities that accept pocket parks in lieu of cash. And it's somewhat private problematic because
we do a lot of apartment complexes that basically incorporate parks in the development. And it seems like there's no credit for that right now.
Correct.
So could there be, when you look at it, that would have a huge impact on your budget if you could actually credit for what was being provided, and now you meet that same goal, you're just doing it a different way, probably a lot more cost effective.
I would say that if it met the standard, that we had at least an acre period long, we've got the walkways, we've got the play equipment, the tables, and some of it's worth considering.
Well, kind of contradicts to what you're saying people want. They want to be able to walk to it.
Right.
And if you can walk to a smaller park, it still provides recreational opportunities for the kids that are living close to it. Mm-hmm. That's going to get used more than a large park. It's pretty far from everything.
Yeah.
So maybe looking at it different might be looking at your goals and changing the goals a little bit to react to what you just mentioned, what people are actually looking for, and trying to cut back on the budget a little bit to provide opportunities in different ways and credits for how we're actually doing things now.
Yeah, and then again, we have to set a standard. Typically, like a lot of park, it's the size of two house lots. It probably wouldn't be sustainable to compensate a larger public. But there's definitely, that's a good idea. Instead of the future, but I would have to say that it probably should have to meet some minimum acreage standard.
That would make complete sense. You could build it way cheaper.
Yeah, that's basically. I mean, I think
we're doing it anyway.
What I was going to get to is just the fact that we can build things at a rate that's less expensive than it is, and so dollar for dollar, it's more efficient. You're getting more, even when you give the credit, you're actually getting more than you would have gotten in return. And I think there's also things we can do where we combine not only that park area, but the trails that can be intermixed within that site. And you can look at the greater impact of what you get and the benefits of the surrounding public. It can be a really great use that really ties in well. So I think there's some creative things that I think could be capitalized on that gives the Parks Department a greater return, gives us better quality of life locally. I think there's some good win-wins there. But it would require some definite standards, a checklist that people have to meet. So. Don't need to say that, it's just going to be a blank slate.
Yeah, a couple things to be considered is that we try to get street frontage on our parks.
Try to get what?
Street frontage, so that they're, because these parks that we build are for the entire public, it's for the surrounding neighborhood. And so if there's a park within a subdivision, you just have to know that, that park is available to everybody. And so the neighbors might not be very happy if they got people coming in from different subdivisions to use that particular park. So it is a county facility, and so that has been problematic I've heard in the past. So because if there's a park that's being built as a part of a subdivision, those folks in that subdivision feel like it's their park. So
you're right. When I used to do project planning, I've done some that it is fenced, so it defeats the purpose of making available to. So they're just different ways to look at it. But if you create a standard, how you incorporate that is just a different issue. If it's a neighborhood park up to 2-3 acres in a master plan area, that makes sense. But if it's in a subdivision and that subdivision is fenced off to address a neighborhood, it defeats the purpose more.
Yeah. No, but at the same time, Oliver, it takes the load off of other parks. So when you look at that ratio we're trying to hit, that 6 acres per thousand, and you're providing internal, now all of a sudden the number of people that need that 6 acres has gone down because they have recreational opportunities that are internal to their development. I guess some kind of credit in that makes sense.
And I would say, in the projects that I'm looking at, I have not seen a park that's been proposed to be not on a public road, made private. Now you have gated community where that could be an issue, but beyond that, I haven't. The ones that I have seen, I don't foresee that as an issue, especially if there is a credit. I think there's a benefit that's seen to what the public wants. It's just ways to help that creates a win-win situation. But right now, that isn't available. And I think that then you could even end up with more park area if you open up the ability to have flexibility and get a park, in fact, get credit for doing that park and maybe expand it, make it larger, or meet the requirements that you have.
Just something to consider. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Something to look at, maybe on a case-by-case basis, see how that works.
Oh, yeah.
Bill, comment, please. A couple months ago, first of all, I want to thank you, Maury, for coming and sharing. But a couple months ago, when you guys first came and you presented a similar proposal, and you described the magnitude of the increase, I know there was some concern, at least I expressed some concern, in the magnitude of the increase, especially as it compares with the average median household wage income, or income that people have experienced over the same time frame. Your proposal here is, if I read this correctly, across the board, your increases from 2002 are over 100%.
Yes.
Right. If I read my chart right, the average median income in the United States over that same period has gone up about 33%. State of Washington, probably different. Clark County, probably different. But not that much different. So the challenge is, and I know you have a responsibility. I think we all appreciate that. But I do hope there's some recognition that flexibility matters, options that have been presented matter, because what we read almost every day in the newspaper is we have a housing crisis. We have an affordability crisis. And you're adding to that. We're pricing people out of homeownership and a quality of life because we choose parks over a roof. I just, it's important that we keep that in mind, and I would ask you to keep it in mind, and I would ask you to be open-minded as you consider, hey, maybe there are ways that we can minimize the cost, help with the housing crisis that we are faced in this community, but yet still provide a quality lifestyle and meet the needs that people say they want for parks. Because it matters. It makes a difference. And I really don't see how we can justify 100% increase in a park fee when the average household median income over the same period has gone up a third. But that's not for me to decide.
No, it's okay. The increases are based on calculations, based on the value of property, based on the cost to construct property or to build parks. And so that is the basic calculation. 2002 was the last time the tips were calculated. They were approved in 2003. It was reapproved again in 2007 and 8, and 2008 and 2009. Went in front of the board, but it was denied those 2 years because of the impending Great Recession. And back in 2008, as a part of doing the calculation process for this particular one, we found out that from 2002 to 2008, the cost of property or the value of properties and the cost of construction had gone up dramatically in that time frame, where it's actually higher than what was proposed here. And so then, of course, with the recession, everything bubbled back, went back down, and now skyrocketing back up again. And so, it's just straight up numbers based on calculations, based on the real values of properties and construction. So, yes, but I do think your words come up hard. So
I mean, I know you do. I know you're caught in this in between here. But there are good ideas that come from this group. Mm-hmm. The private market can deliver an equal product at a lesser cost if there's some flexibility from the decision makers in your office.
We've been approached by developers to ask if we can buy a park that's already developed. And because it is cheaper for you folks to do it than it is for us. And we're gonna pay prevailing wage, we're gonna go through everything because we're using county funds. So that's a wonderful idea. And so I can see future partnerships going that way and helping each other out in that regard.
Well, so I guess my concern is, but if you're not going to count the pocket parks or any of that other stuff towards the inventory that you have available, so you know somebody builds a 50 lot subdivision and they put a pocket park in there, and the people in that subdivision tend to use that park, not the regional or neighborhood parks that the county is developing, you're understating the inventory. You're purposely understating the inventory of parks just because it doesn't meet some criteria. And if you can count those small parks, all of a sudden the need for this money goes away, or it doesn't go away, but it goes down significantly, which changes the calculation. I mean, it's you said it's all numbers. Well, the things that go into those numbers are things like how much parkland do we need? You start counting all these half-acre, one-acre parks in subdivisions, and I mean, I've seen in some of the subdivisions, because they're incorporating critical areas and stuff like that into park areas, they're putting in walking trails, they're putting in picnic areas, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Some of these areas are relatively large, and actually, you know, probably would meet the definition of a neighborhood park. They're just being built by the part of the private sector instead of the public sector. To not count them seems a little counterintuitive to me anyways, just from a, if your thoughts are about providing parks to the people of Clark County in a cost-effective way and in a way they're going to use them, then the private sector is doing a wonderful job of that right now with some of the stuff that they're doing. I know my kids don't go to any of the publicly funded parks, and we live out in the boonies. They ask me to take them into town, and they go to these little pocket parks in the subdivisions, and that's pretty much all they ever use. Because there's the amenities that they want there. There's, you know, there's a little basketball area and running trails and stuff like that. So I think that's where I'm having some trouble understanding the logic behind not incorporating that area into your calculations. It's fulfilling that need, but you're not recognizing that
today basically reduces standards that make the determining factor. So size has been the standard. 3 to 5 acres has been traditionally,
right.
The minimum.
I guess the point is the standards, if all it takes is looking at the standards and making them fit the reality, not trying to make reality fit a standard, but trying to make the standard actually reflect what the reality is, then I think there's still not clicking in there.
Yes. Just to push back a little bit, we have to have at least a minimum standard of a certain size of acreage, because I have seen some parks, City of Battleground is a great example, and where they have literally about a half of a house lot with a single park bench on it, and that was donated to the city in exchange for tip credits. So that's not a park. it's a rest stop. And so.
Where you have lots that are really steep slopes that probably aren't usable anyway.
To hit our standards, it's not just acreage, but we also have, you know, walkways is necessary. People want walkways, you know, through the parks. They like loops in the parks so they can walk around every morning. It has to be of some size. The quality of the furniture, when we try to build a park, it should last 30 years. You know, the irrigation, the play equipment, all that stuff. And so there's a set standard for everything that goes into a neighborhood park. And so it does cost. If you were to build it, it would be cheaper, but there's a cost to building longevity. So, but definitely a good idea. So if we can work with the developers in the future to get, come up with a certain standard, you know, right now we're talking about going down to a 2 acre minimum. You know, maybe a 1 acre. Typically, in the past, 1 acre irrigated, so kids can go out there and play ball. They'll have a baseball game. That's kind of why we have a minimum of 1 acre irrigated, so they can do that. They can play rugby, they can play football, they can play baseball. That's why we have a certain size for an indoor farm. But you know, there's always ways we can get around that.
Do you count school sites?
What's that?
Schools that have those facilities. Does that go into your 6 acres per thousand?
School size, we work with schools. We have 3 parks that are connected to schools. And the park that we're building right now, Sorensen, is connected to a future school property. And we also have Sunset, which we have a 5 acre parcel on the south side of that school. I talked to Jennifer Halleck, who's on our Parks Advisory Board today, and about the future of working with schools to share their sports fields with the general public when their kids aren't out there playing. Said it's a good idea.
I mean, they do it now. It's functioning. Our biggest neighborhood park is the school. And everyone uses it to go walk around the track, football out there. And I have a feeling that this whole budget and the whole plan is put together not counting some of our biggest resources, like those areas. So if those aren't counted, instead of, again, relooking the plan, looking at counting some of those areas, and shoot, those numbers might go down.
Yeah. Well, to talk about community parks, a lot of our community parks, like Curtain Creek, which is a future park that we're going to be looking at soon, it's primarily going to be another, not quite to the standard of Luke Jensen, but there's a need for sports fields. When it comes to schools, organized ball sports is one of those things that you don't see a lot of. And talking to Jennifer, that's something that they're talking about doing. They want to set up a fee schedule. How much would they charge per hour to play on the school properties just to get revenue for themselves. But our future community parks are essentially going to have sports consultants in them, because there's such a need and there's a waiting list for sports. So, and the community parks are between 10 and 50 acres in size.
Just a question, the regional trail system, is there a link to that piece here in the park planning? I mean, let's say you have a large park that's going to be built in the future, and then how do you link that? I mean, is that part of this process?
It is. We have a regional trails plan, and a lot of it goes through the urban unincorporated area. We cannot use $5 for trails. Gotcha. It has to be for park development and acquisition only. But we have a lot of trails identified. The one thing that we try to do is connect our parks to schools, connect our parks to neighborhoods and stores, that kind of thing. So everybody walk to their destination instead of drive, if at all possible. And so that's always a plan of ours moving forward. But yes, we do have a big regional trails plan. We just got a recent grant from National Parks for the Lewis and Clark Trail. 47-mile trail that connects Washington to Richfield along the Columbia River corridor, which, as you know, a lot of those segments have already been built by the cities. We're just trying to connect those pieces.
Do you have the right of way for that?
What's that?
Do you have the right of way for that, Bill? Or is that what, a part of this process that would be acquisition of right of way?
No, we can't use this for that. It's only for park
property. I'm sorry, the grant you just mentioned?
Yeah.
Can you use that for right-of-way acquisition?
It's not a money grant. It is a technical service grant. So we're going to have a National Park Service help us do a site plan for the entire trail system. Many of those segments have already been completed. As you well know, the whole front edge of Vancouver has done. Washougal has just recently created a trail with a community park that is called the Steamboat Landing, which connects down to William Park. So we've got Evergreen Highway Stretch. We've got the Port of Vancouver. That we've been working with to get all the way down to Vancouver Lake, and then working from Vancouver Lake to get up to Richfield. And so we've got Richfield it's fully supported. So trails connecting, we've got trails that connect to that bisect basically the urban unincorporated area. So there's a lot of trails there. But that's one thing that I would ask of developers is when you put developments in, make sure there's a connection point that comes in and out of that site. So especially if you plan to have parks in the future.
Sure. Yeah. One of the things I keep thinking about is how the county, as a separate entity, can incentivize developers to move more towards the PUD concept, where those parks become more integral to development. That may free up the money to go for the larger sports complexes that. I know in Richfield and Camas, for instance, we're basically bullied into PUDs. I'm not saying that necessarily we should mandate that here in the county, but I think if the right incentives are there, I think most developers and home builders I'm starting to represent these days see a value to the buyers, and they're already putting them in their developments because it's sort of a mandate of who their buyers are anyway. And so to the extent that we can maybe loosen up the codes to maybe cajole more people to make use of that PUD ordinance, I think that may result in more parks than are just pocket parks, but something more substantial within a development. We're certainly seeing it up in Richfield and Kansas.
Yeah, good examples like the Erickson Farms Park. That's a sizable park. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there are credits given for that one. Probably not.
We haven't been doing credits of it.
No. But if it is, I guess the point is that should be in your calculation. It's those parks that do provide that opportunity and they're missing. So
I guess I would add that if it's a requirement, which means that we would have to change our parks plan. I can see where you could include that in the capital facilities plan. I think the way now the capital facilities plan is structured, when you're donated land, then that's a savings. But it's not something that Bill would project out right now in his plan.
I guess it's just that threshold, that 6 acres per thousand. There's a lot of things not being counted in that. And then because of that, we might be overestimating the need because so many things are not included right now. Like, I mean, the schools is a big one. Parks and PUDs, required recreation, multifamily, pocket parks or private parks, all of those take that burden off that 6 acres to 1,000. And it could be a significant impact. And if that's the case, your numbers will go down quite a bit and the fees go down. But I guess that's one takeaway I'm hearing from our conversation here.
Okay. Well, keep in mind, at least our parks, they serve a community in a half mile radius walking distance, which is actually over half mile in a lot of cases because you're going to walk to them. And so that's where size of park matters. We're going to get there. So this is the, you know, so it's definitely worth looking into for us. But again, we have to have some kind of a minimum standard that we have to abide by. So I don't want to get into the point where we're trying to take single lots and call them
yep.
a park.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think though there is some opportunities where there may be some existing parks and it may, and their pocket or whatever. And I think proximity is a great, in my perspective, kind of what we're talking about, Steve, is that's of greatest benefit and use and gets the highest use is how close is in proximity to those users. And it maybe they don't meet those standards so long as the size threshold is not the issue, but there may be a more efficient use of Clark County Parks dollars where it's going in and improving that so it meets the standard that's required. And then maybe there's some things like that can be, you know, it's a matter of if it's not understood and mapped out where those are at, maybe there is, and then it's you know, saying, hey, here's some prime candidates of what we can go at, and it gives us an efficient use and it helps us to meet our demand, and especially it's in these highly developed areas where it's really tricky to find a parcel, and that's tough. So I get that, and I'm sure that pushes up your, what you pay per acre is really intense when it comes to developed areas, and when you get more rural areas, it costs a lot less. So I think in those urban areas, you get really, it helps if there's creativity that can be applied.
This is a follow-on. So the park impact fees, we're only talking about the Vancouver UGA. Park impact fees are not applied in the rural area.
Yeah.
So the money that Bill gets in TIF has to go to one of those districts, wherever it's collected.
We're always willing to engage in the public and private relationships. We've got many mod soccer fields at All Saints Episcopal Church where they provided the land and we built soccer fields on them.
Yeah.
You know, those things happen and we're always open to, you know, ideas like that.
Can you explain that rural urban? I'm struggling with that. So
you got incorporated City of Vancouver and you got the unincorporated urban Clark County, which is basically the
Okay, no, I got that, but so rural people that are building rural lots, you're saying they don't have a park standard, but they have enough land to they're still using sports complexes and other more regional facilities.
It has to do
so
with
that's
the
you're getting a subsidy.
Well, do you mean rural, which is outside the
area?
So that's there's no debt on that area, no parking type fees. So it's basically general fund based. And so you have rural areas like Louisville, Freshman Park, Vancouver Lane, those areas. Some of our parks are actually within city limits, but they're regional facilities. But if it's not, if it's outside of the TIF boundary, then obviously we have to use other funding sources to acquire and develop.
Well, I'm assuming that rural property owners place ports.
Now you're being a smart aleck.
They only use Little Creek Park, and that's so that's just the horses out there.
Moving along, this is in the packet of information you received, hopefully. So we took the new scenarios for phasing in the new rates, and this pie chart in the packet just shows how the different phasing scenarios, the impact on the public and private share, and the one in the middle being the adopted rates. This is our timeline for, this was for the fee rate that we have now, that's adopted now. This is the public process that we went through, and as you mentioned, we were here in D.
Yeah, thank you for coming. Yes.
Yep. And we also spoke to the BIA. These are the actions for PC to consider tonight. Basically, number one, just the PC recommending to the board adoption of one of the following scenarios. and the implication of what the board does decide to do. It may require the following. It may require whatever scenario they choose, whatever fee they choose, that may require us to update our county plan or our parks plan. It may require that we adjust our county budget and our parks capital facilities plan.
Julie, is the board looking for feedback from the Ronis as well, or just the planning commission?
Oh, no. Yeah, that's why we're here. So I want to add that if you do want to comment, here's our plan amendment process. And we do have a work session tonight that's open to the public. However, we are not taking public testimony. If you want to make a comment, I would suggest that you email Greg or email myself. Probably the most direct way would be email me. And that will be part of the public testimony and the information that we would share with the board. There's a number of ways to provide public testimony. You can attend the Planning Commission hearing. It's at 6:30 on November 17th if you want to provide oral testimony or submit a letter in the record or an email. Those are the ways that you can testify. As I mentioned, the state law for out-of-cycle amendments is that we adopt our change in the Parks Capital Facilities Plan at the same time as the Board of County Councilors hearing on December 6th. We chose that date because it's also the night that the board is adopting their budget. Any more questions?
I want you to know I really appreciate all the feedback that we got.
Thank you guys for coming. I know there's differences of opinion, but you have a job to do. Thank you for doing your job.
Thank you.
Our job is to ask questions. Yeah, that's mine. My suggestion.
Just a procedural question. They're talking about public testimony. We're not actually technically the public. We're an advisory board to the council. What's that? Okay, so we would comment a different way than the general public would. We would make our motion and deliver it to the conversation.
So I just have a question. We're a development engineering advisory board. Mm-hmm. What part of this fits within our framework?
It's impact fees on new development. It's right in our yes. Because it affects new development. These are impact fees, not operations.
I'm gonna make a motion just to aid the discussion. I move that the DEEB recommend that the 5-year rollout plan or impact fee increase.
A second, Mr. Geiser.
Can I have a friendly amendment? And you can decide if it's friendly or not. I also think they need to look at some of these things they're missing from their plan because we believe they're because of these exclusions of the areas that we talked about, and there's a big list of them, that they're overestimating the need, and that might take the budget shortfall that they have by rolling this out. And I think they hit it because I don't think they're counting schools, park or pocket parks, PUD parks, any of those things. I think they should look at those.
So there, yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. I'm not sure if that's an amendment or a separate explanation.
That's actually more of a separate potential work item or work plan because I mean, as far as what they're doing right now, I think we need to clear direction.
Yep, that's why I said possible for that much. Apparently not.
But yeah, and I guess, and there may not be a place to state this, and I made a comment to Odd. It was, you know, we went over a lot of things that we already discussed before. The one thing we didn't see was what's the cost per acre that's being paid. And I know when we saw that before, I know I deal with that a ton. And there's nothing close to what we see and what they pay and what we pay on the market. And it's not as if there's some separation there, and I don't. So that is where there is a giant leap that I don't comp. I have, that's where I struggle
the only thing, most,
and I don't know how, I don't know if there's a way to address
that. The only defense I would say about that, and I would agree with you for the most part, Terry, I think that the cost per acre is disproportionate to what the market is.
Or more.
But when you have the PIF districts, you know, drawn in such, you know, tight circumferences, and you say you have to
target something there, you know, that they're, you know, it's maybe one of the situations where there's not a lot of inventory.
You're limited.
So that one number is, because you have to pay it, for instance, really high in District 3, I mean, it could skew the whole kit caboodle.
Jamie, right. You know, does the park district employ appraisals?
Yes.
Before they can purchase a property?
Yes, they're required to buy it.
Yeah, they have to.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at it the last time it was here, and they had a couple of the districts are so developed that, I mean, in order to get the 2 or 3 acres that they're required, they're going to have to buy half a dozen houses.
Or commercial property.
Or commercial property, commercial industrial property. It's, I mean, that's where that cost goes, that cost gets skewed, but, you know, again, if the standards are so inflexible that they have to have 2 or 3 acres, then they're stuck having to spend, you know, $250,000 for each 10,000 square feet of property that they're buying, because they got to buy a place with a house on it.
Hawk, could I get a clarification to your motion? You talked about the five-year rollout. There's two scenarios on the five-year rollout. The 20% rollout, 20% per year,
yes.
Or there's the 60% plus 10% for the...
Oh, I'm sorry.
20%
which I think is scenario two in there.
That is
scenario two.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, thank you for asking. Mm-hmm. I wish to include both of them, the scenario two, 20% over 5 years in the motion, in case
yeah.
the scenario is
changed. Yeah, yeah. The five's death, 20%
yep.
a year.
Is there any recommendation we can make in regards to addressing flexibility?
Am I lying through this?
Separate motion.
Let's make that a separate motion. Okay. Okay. You second.
Yeah, I have.
Okay. Okay. And that's the same second line.
On.
We've been seconded. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Second motion?
So the second motion would be that they take a look at their plan to incorporate areas excluded, for example, school fields, private parks, parks, required open space, and multifamily PDs. Hopefully, we got all that. I think those are just some examples, but they should look at those plans and incorporate those because these excluded areas overestimate the need and could lower the amount needed to fund new parks.
And I would just add to that, consistent with the functionality requirements of the county, because I think that's a huge issue. They brought up the Battleground example where you have a quarter of an acre with a house on it.
With a park bench on it.
Yeah, I think there's just sure. some clarifiers
there
here.
There has yes. to be some yes. standard or some use category, because, like, I mean, the example I used, I mean, a little pocket park, it's only 15,000 square feet or so, but it's got a little basketball court on it and, you know, a play structure, and heck, it's always full of kids, and it's not like the size doesn't make a whole lot of difference. It's the amenities that are there that
yeah.
people are going for. So if you can have standards that are flexible enough to allow for these small little, you know, street game basketball court type of setup or a tennis court that doesn't take up that much room, but it's going to get heavily used for its purpose. I think it's that's a big win for the community, and it's not counted right now.
With Don's addition to your amendment or your motion, I will second that.
Will you repeat it, Eric?
What's that?
We repeat.
Repeat it? Okay, I'm going to try.
Please.
I kind of made it up there.
No.
The Parks Department take a second look at their plan to incorporate some of the existing recreational opportunities that are in the community, including things like school fields, church fields, private or target parks, required recreational open space, and multifamily and PEDs. And the reason is that these do provide function, and because these are excluded, it overestimates the need.
And we're going to add to that, insert there in that sentence, consistent with the functional requirements, consistent with the functional park requirements of Clark County. So in other words, it needs to fit what that is.
Nicole, if you want to circulate that, maybe, because it would probably need a little wordsmithing. That's more of a concept.
Okay.
So once you have something drafted, if you want to circulate it, we can modify it.
I'll probably email Monday or Tuesday.
Perfect.
Okay. Yep. So motion and second. Further discussion? All in favor?
Are we voting on the memo? The motion is being circulated on Monday.
Well,
yes. We're going to vote to prepare that memo so we don't waste Nicole's time. And then we will all have to approve the wordsmithing if we need it, but that is the basic concept for a recommendation.
So, answer your question on.
Yeah, but I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that because words matter. And I think we ought to, I don't see a problem delaying the vote until Monday when the wordsmithing is complete.
So, why don't we just vote on preparing that memo and then we finalize it with the other one, just in concept? Okay.
Before we go any further, though, we want to make sure that this is included in tonight's discussion. And that's
a good point.
Yeah.
I think we should spend 1 minute drafting this right now.
Okay. So what do we have so far today?
Second motion was made to include additional areas of existing recreational opportunities, including churches, schools, neighborhood pocket parks.
Required open space in multifamily and PUDs. I guess I would put in recreational open space, not just general open space. So I'd have recreational open space in there. Yeah, you don't want to just do any open space. It has to be
Steve's got it.
It's something like that. The calculation used by the park department include these elements.
Can we ask for one comment from Steve here? Steve, would you
just a word certain idea. County code includes the phrase for an open space allocation. Phrase private recreational facilities. I don't have the definition of any, but I know that's a specific term of art under our county code as it's applied to. It's essentially interchangeable with public parks in terms of the open space acreage allocation. So I would encourage you to add that particular phrase in your motion.
Nicole, could you read that? I'm sorry.
I need to start over, honestly. Sorry. Second motion was made to include that the calculation used what Steve said.
Which would
include.
I think what I was thinking is we could add that private recreational facility to the list that Eric came up with.
Yes.
So that's what I'm thinking that.
That
I just didn't clarify that. So it'd be one sentence, or one long sentence with that private recreational facility added to that list that Eric put together.
Thank you, Rod. You're welcome. I think Susan's got something.
Can I make a comment?
Susan, yeah, please.
Private recreational facility is a use listing in a lot of our zones. We don't, at least in land use, review it as the same as a public park. So, it's your motion. We can do whatever you want, obviously, but we may have a slight land use understanding.
Yeah. I'm hoping that the functionality piece deals with that, Susan. That this is not every swing set in the entire Clark County area. That's my hope.
Because the PUD standards are pretty open for usability.
Okay. But I think the private recreational facility is probably
do come into play. I mean, I'm thinking of places like, you know, Glenwood Ball Fields up in 119th Street is a private recreation facility, but it's, you know, it's where the little leagues play their ball and all that stuff.
So. Same purpose as a park.
Exactly.
So they should be included in that calculation.
Yeah.
That's basically what we're trying to get across. Probably more words than we can say. And this is a start because we're trying to get a memo out for tonight's planning commission. There's going to be several hearings, and I think we're trying to refine that.
And the hearing isn't for months. So.
Second motion was made to include that the calculation used include areas of private recreational facilities, churches, pocket parks, and school facilities.
PUDs.
Yep.
PUD parks.
Yeah. PUD parks.
Church fields. So there's a lot of them that provide like soccer fields and public use.
Baseball fields.
That are used, you know, private recreational facilities to take the load off the park system.
Church does.
Yeah, and not all. We're not including all churches. We're saying those facilities associated with them. Maybe we need to clarify that.
Federal. Wait, it doesn't look like
spot.
Yeah. Like, for example, the soccer fields that on First Church of God that are right adjacent to there, they're going to share those with the parks. The parks can use those soccer fields, and those soccer fields can be, you know, they kind of go back and forth, and the school can use some of those fields. I don't think those are included in the calculation right now on the parks area. So because they're not included, we need to have more parks. We need that 6 acres per thousand. And if they are, then it doesn't affect them. But I don't think
so. Would it help for creating an inventory and calculating that we have some agreement that, between a church and parks or some other organizations? Otherwise, churches just say, hey, I have this field, and we let the neighbors use it. Well, is there some way of tracking that other than?
I think we're good.
That's
the next step.
The next step.
Okay. Marty, there are examples of what you're saying right down by our house.
For joint use agreements.
There's a soccer field, a church. I think it's got to be more than just any church in the
area. Not any church or any private facility. It has to meet the purpose of the park.
School districts have expressed open use policies.
St. Joe's.
And what was the second part about being consistent with functional park requirements?
That list, and then what we'd say consistent with Clark County Parks, with the functional requirements of Clark County Parks Department, something to that effect.
Consistent with Clark County.
With the functional requirements of the Parks Department.
What's great is those churches and that has to be maintained by the Parks Department. Those are the ones that are.
And the big ones, I think, are the schools. I mean, like I said, in our neighborhood, the biggest part is the school, and that's where everyone goes and plays ball. It's probably not in their plan this coming. And that is the biggest provider of recreational opportunity.
So those are not always open, though. Some schools and some school districts have started fencing some of those
Second motion was made to include that the calculation used include areas of private recreational facilities, churches, PUD parks, pocket parks, and school properties, consistent with the functional requirements of the park department.
I would add one other item, Nicole, on the list, and that would be active open space.
Active
open space.
I think they're going to
find
out a lot
more interesting
there. Okay. Got it? Motion. I think we have that read. We have
yes.
a motion. We have a second.
Yes.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Motion carried.
So we need to get this to the planning into the planning commission session, which is within an hour, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So could I ask Nicole, could you just email that to Lori? Would that be the acceptable pathway here? I think time permitting, or
and is there a staff person that handles planning commission? Is there a staff for you?
It
should go to them.
Yes,
a lot of times the message from the person delivering it, the parks isn't going to like that message, so they're probably not going to deliver it the same way.
Right.
It needs to be independent.
Okay.
So
I'm not sure who that is.
Is it Sonia?
Do you know who that is?
Yeah, Sonia.
Okay.
Sonia.
So, could you make sure this gets to Sonia then? Okay.
Poor Bill.
Yeah.
Come closer. I need everyone else to stop talking. Please.
So, Steve, I would say on that, I at least circulated that to staff, including Chris Horn, our transportation manager, Carolyn, others in the county. Didn't get a whole lot back. I think you made some very good points and considerations in that. I did hear back from Carolyn that we just wanted to make sure that if we went that route, that we wouldn't hold any safety issues, any traffic safety issues, you know, in limbo. Or jeopardize or anything like that. So I did hear back there. My thought on this is, given that it's directly affecting code, would this not be something that would proceed through that process of standard code amendment updates, which I think Jan normally heads that up and then works directly with Chris Horn? Is that usually the pathway there, Marty?
Sure.
And I mean, that's
code amendments.
Yeah, code amendments. I
guess I would ask.
Is it a minor code amendment, or is it we're talking major? I've missed the conversation.
It's fairly major code amendment.
Regarding?
Bonding.
We would put that in as a biannual code amendment, though.
What are we bonding?
It would probably meet the criteria for that.
What are we bonding?
Yeah. But it's a major kind of policy issue we highlighted as such. We've done that. It depends on
it's for model,
how many
model
items
homes.
You get on a list of
I drafted and circulated language. I don't need to take it from there. So figure out my understanding of that.
I
didn't do that.
If there's
a different portal, like
was it a letter you submitted?
I saw it. Have you seen that?
I don't recall seeing it, but
did you send that right away?
I know I sent it to internal staff, and I started there. I wasn't at the last meeting, so I'd gone off the minutes that I thought you had some discussion with Chris Horn on it. But I certainly,
we were all right here in the meeting. That was his one request, was that there be unambiguous discretion on the staff, so I included that provision. But yeah, I mean, I guess if there's a different route, that's great. But I was under the impression that I was asked by this board.
I'll make sure that
I have not seen.
Okay. I'll make sure it gets out.
Okay.
I'll make sure it gets out actually today before we leave. I did circulate it internally, so at least we're over that hurdle. And
then I would just simply review the request that I think this is a reasonable statutory language that I drafted.
So pending deep response on it, then wouldn't that be the pathway forward? Is to bring it into our code amendment updates, or maybe it's not to that.
Do you amend the code? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a specific code amendment to CCC 40.0.
I don't remember exactly, but it's the bond.
I'll give it to you.
The suggestion would be we would add it to our work plan, pull into the biannual.
Well, we could take a position on it. I mean, we could agree or not agree or whatever, but bottom line is, though, they're not going to have a one-off code amendment. But we'll have to roll it into the other biannuals.
That's our preference.
Yeah,
I understand.
Okay.
So we can certainly review it and at least be maybe ahead of the game.
We'll get it out, and we'll keep it moving forward for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Do we want it on our agenda to at least touch on it next time? So
be happy to put it on there. Yeah, I'll get it out before actually tonight or by tomorrow at the latest. So we'll have the month to look at it, and we'll revisit it next month. So.
It'll still be ahead of my
annual. Or at least we'll make a recommendation to put it on.
Yes.
Okay. So do the annual report and that item, Steve. The bond.
Sorry.
We'll do the annual report and the bonding. Those are two items for next meeting.
Yeah, we got that.
Okay, gotcha. Any other public comment? Seeing no additional public comment, we are adjourned.